Our HR team member is focused on culture fit. Are they kind, authentic, and generous? Are they here for the mission? Do they love to learn? At this point, if our hiring manager and HR team member think this could be a good fit, then the third round also involves in-person conversations with David and me. David and I know Mogul equally well, and together, our further assessments confirm the candidate's skill as well as cultural fit. We provide one additional layer of screening for the kinds of people that make Mogul a coveted place to work. If we observe any hints of meanness or misogyny, the candidate is eliminated. If they seem inflexible and unwilling to evolve with the growth of the company, we know they won't be a fit. We look for the kind of passion and compassion that comes from being mission-oriented. That, to us, is a sign they are right for this place. Finally, the fourth round involves time spent with the wider team. Past this point, the job is theirs. We bring them into whatever department they would be joining and have them spend a few hours with the team. This final round just confirms that they are the right fit for us and that we are the right fit for them. It is a lengthy process, but I know that it has served us well and has led to our incredible retention rate. The people you invite onto your team will lead to the success or failure of your dream. They are the people you will be surrounded by each day. The people who will reflect on you or your company in meetings and message boards everywhere they go. You want to make sure that you select the right people. Take time to figure out a process that is right for you and stick to it. Trust your gut. If there are any red flags, listen to them, heed them, and wait for the right person to come along to fill the role. This goes for when you are interviewing for a job as well. You want to ensure that it is a cultural fit for you, just as much as you want to impress them and show your talents. Do the people in the office seem like the kind of people you want to surround yourself with? Is there a spirit of collaboration which will allow you to put your entrepreneurial mindset to work? Does the person whom you will report to possess the skills you are looking to develop? This is ultimately why you should authentically be yourself throughout the interview process, to ensure it's a true mutual fit for the team and for you. Secrets to nailing the interview. Research the company beforehand. Become aware of any new deals, mergers, or important milestones reached. Follow them on social media, so you'll be aware of anything new that arises, even on the day of your interview. Clean up your digital presence. Download the Social Sweepster app, which will flag pictures of suspicious objects or any posts with profanity. Schedule it right. Try to schedule your interview for Tuesday at 10:30 a.m. Okay, it doesn't have to be so precise, but when you have your interview is important. You want to avoid Monday or Friday, when the interviewer may be distracted, and you don't want an interview right before lunch, when an interviewer may be hungry. Obviously, you want to work with their schedule, but the earlier in the day, the better, so that they have a chance to think about you and refer to you in conversations with others. Ultimately, it helps them to remember you, which is key when there is a lot of competition. Remember your storyline. Take a moment to review the storyline you are featuring with your resume and application. Have a few stories already prepared that you can work into any question they ask of you. Make sure to stay focused on PAR. What was the P, problem you addressed? What A, action did you take to solve it? And what was the R, result? Or what changed thanks to your action? Start small to sustain yourself. Establishing a team that you can trust is essential to your business success. But at the end of the day, you've got to be able to pay their salaries. You must discover a way to monetize sustainably. I never wanted Mogul to be dependent on financing. I wanted it to be a company that earned its own revenue. It began early on with selling marketing campaigns on the site. This was an easy way to stay focused on making the platform as strong as possible, engage with our users, but still have some revenue coming in. But we knew that we wanted Mogul to be more than just a platform. We wanted it to turn a profit so that we could take that profit and invest it into other areas, leading to even greater impact. Anytime we considered growing in a new direction, we stayed focused on two things. 1. Does it align with our mission to empower women across the globe with access to information, opportunities, and education? If the answer is no, that wasn't the right direction for us. 2. Is it scalable? In other words, can it grow indefinitely, reaching more and more people, providing more and more revenue, and more areas for Mogul to expand with continued efficiency? If the answer was yes to both of those questions, it was worth exploring. The very first revenue-generating division at Mogul was called Mogul Studios. Taking Bethany's and my background in content production and distribution, and Nemesha's expertise in marketing, we planned to partner with different companies to help them authentically connect and engage with women on our platform and channels through marketing campaigns. We had access to millions of the very customers many brands hoped to reach. This would enable us to impact and influence the ways in which companies were communicating with women externally. Step 1. We knew what we were trying to do. But we had to get to step 2. Acquire some actual clients. We were brand new in this space and didn't have any success stories to prove our worth and skill. So initially, I had to beg people to partner with us. In the early days of Mogul, I begged people to partner with us. You can't have an ego when you're an entrepreneur. You've got to ask over and over and over again for a warm connection, for a lead, for a job. I reached out to several fellow female founders and pleaded with them to trust us with a campaign. Did they have marketing dollars in their budget? Did they need to reach new customers? We had a fast-growing network, and we promised to deliver. People did not say yes right away. We were still new, after all. Once Soraya agreed to our first campaign at $500, our next client, located in Singapore, invited us to pitch 3 times before she said yes. But she ultimately agreed. We could produce a campaign consisting of 20 pieces of written content for her, for $2,000. In a month's time. This was not a great deal. In fact, this was a very difficult deal to execute. But when you're just starting out, listen carefully to what your first clients are requesting and make a few initial deals, even if the terms are lower than what you would like in the future. It gives you a chance to succeed and prove your worth. Then you have a case study to show the next potential client. And step by step, you will work your way toward being able to charge what you know you are actually worth. That month was painful. It takes a lot of work to create 1 piece of content for a campaign, and now we had to create 20 pieces of content in a very short amount of time for what felt like next to nothing for our bank account. But we did it, and the client loved our work and was extremely happy with the results. Now we had a case study to show the next client, who partnered with us to spearhead a campaign for a new brand that was targeted at women. This time we were paid $5,000 for 1 piece of content, another case study for our portfolio. Our next deal was for $35,000 for our first major corporate partner, who had grown interested in Mogul due to our case studies. And with that, our fees continued to increase, along with our client base. Soon, Mogul Studios was partnering with hundreds of companies, and within 3 years, companies were offering between $1 million and $10 million per campaign. Time and time again, we pitched alongside Facebook, LinkedIn, and other giants in order to win these marketing campaigns. Today, we partner with Fortune 1000 companies worldwide. As an increasing number of companies began coming to us with different kinds of content to create and distribute, we also began to partner with TV networks, studios, researchers, and publishers who would reach out to create content in collaboration with us. Women's voices and perspectives are grossly underrepresented in the media. Only 15% of feature films feature a female protagonist. Male-speaking parts in films outnumber female-speaking parts 3-to-1. Thus, Mogul Studios today is additionally co-producing and collaborating on Emmy-nominated shows and feature films, publishing research and books, and more, all focused on reshaping storytelling for women and ensuring it is empowering to women worldwide. But it didn't start there. It started with 20 pieces of content for $2,000. So no matter where you start, remember you are riding a rocket ship. Where you start is not where you'll end up. You've just got to start somewhere, believe in what you are doing, and go after what you want. Tricks and tools for getting a response. When selling, it takes on average 6 tries to get a response. So you can't stop after 2 or 3 tries. You must be tenacious. This applies to reaching out to potential mentors as well. At Mogul, we use a couple of different software products that help us do business. One is Reportive, a tool that will ensure that you are using the correct email address. It helps even further by giving you the person's complete background when you hover over their email address, allowing you to tailor your request or pitch. We also use Streak software, which allows you to know if someone has read your email or not, and on what device and in what location. This allows you to see, for example, if someone is traveling at the time, and so they probably didn't have a chance to read your email in full. Sometimes having this additional information gives you the confidence to reach back out several times to ensure you eventually get a response. Find the right person. Sometimes the growth of your company stems from coming in contact with the right person at just the right time. This happened to me, and it led to the creation of Mogul's second division, Mogul Redefined, as well as the final member of our founding team. My former colleague Scott, the one who had been the first to text me about Forbes 30 Under 30, had recently reached out, wondering if I could meet his younger sister, Natasha. He thought it would be a mutually beneficial meeting, but he additionally hoped I would become a mentor to her. As we met for tea, I found Natasha to be razor-sharp and worldly, given her French and German background, yet also kind and soft-spoken. Having graduated magna cum laude from Georgetown, she was currently working at an education foundation, developing case study materials for Columbia Business School and Parsons School of Design. About 9 months after I launched Mogul, she asked to get together again. She passionately asked me if there was anything she could do for Mogul, either part-time or free. She really loved what she already knew of the organization, had been an active user on Mogul since its inception, and was hopeful for the opportunity to collaborate. At that time, unfortunately, there were no opportunities open at Mogul. Our team was so small, after all, just David, Bethany, Nemesha, Yuli, and me. But I loved her initiative in coming forward with this request. It reminded me of all the times I had done the same. And I was also impressed by her remarkable ability to persuade, given her otherwise gentle demeanor. The next morning, I woke up and had a sudden vision for exactly what Natasha could do at Mogul. That very week, I had happened to create a roadmap for Mogul to develop educational courses that would enable women to continue their personal and professional development. These courses, I envisioned, would cover topics across every facet of a woman's life. Was it aligned with our mission? Absolutely. Was it scalable? Of course. We could offer these courses to our users across the globe. And Natasha had just the right experience to execute and lead the way. So I caught Natasha up, pitched her the idea behind Mogul Learning, and said that while we didn't have a full-time position at the time, we would love to bring her on part-time. Our intention would be that this would morph into a full-time position within about 6 months. She said yes and jumped in immediately. Together, we eventually created award-winning courses composed of more than 1,200 course modules, ranging from becoming an entrepreneur to rising to the top of your chosen profession, to personal finance, higher education, relationships, engineering, health and fitness, and more. Mogul Learning launched in October 2015 with a huge event hosted by Natasha and our friends at WeWork. The feedback we received was incredible and inspiring as our users thanked us for providing them the kind of personal and professional guidance and development they had been asking for since Mogul's inception. Mogul Learning has ultimately become one of the core products offered by our consumer products division, Mogul Redefined. Mogul Redefined is redefining what it is to be a mogul by developing innovating and cutting-edge education-related products for our users, just as we did with our platform. As for Natasha, we celebrated her transition to full-time at the launch, and today she is VP of Global Sales and Mogul at Work, the next division at Mogul to reveal itself to us. Keep your eyes open for what might come next. Just like meeting with Natasha prompted the creation of Mogul Learning, it is important to always be open to where your company might be wanting to grow. Look for signs that it is the right time for expansion. Sometimes we have set ideas for what we want to accomplish, but we don't know the exact timing. By being flexible yet strategic, you stay focused on what you want to eventually accomplish, but allow the correct timing to reveal itself. Shortly after Mogul Learning launched, we began reaching millions more women per week. Our platform was growing fast, and companies realized that there was an immense network of driven, ambitious, intelligent women convening on Mogul every day. Natasha and I were sitting in a meeting with the Estee Lauder companies one day when they asked a question that more and more companies had been asking. Could they have an employer profile on Mogul so that they could post jobs to the community and access the top female talent that made up our user base directly? I had always intended that we would build out in this way, to essentially move into being the very platform where women would look for a job. That Mogul could not only be the platform where you want to share meaningful conversations with real questions and real advice, but also be the space where you actually connected with your next opportunity. But I had been persuaded by others to hold off. Wait until the demand was there. Wait until companies came to us to ask for this privilege. Now we couldn't ignore that there seemed to be true demand. The Estee Lauder executive left the room briefly, and I was pacing back and forth. This was it, Natasha and I decided. We needed to start this new division. Give these companies that were already working with us through Mogul Studios for marketing the ability to create company profiles on the site for HR. This was an additional way to monetize as well as support our mission. There would be an annual subscription fee to have a profile, so it was scalable. And giving our users direct access to job postings was definitely in line with our mission. Natasha and I couldn't wait to wrap up this meeting so we could get back to the office and start hashing out the details of this new software. Mogul at Work was soon born, the third revenue-generating division within our organization. Companies are able to talk about their mission, their culture, their values, and more, so that women are able to understand what kind of company they are interviewing for. They post job openings across the world, helping us accelerate the rate at which women are obtaining managerial positions and above. Currently, women represent only 10 to 20% of top leadership positions. Within just a few short months of launching this new software, we had more than 100 company profiles. Today, we partner with Fortune 1000 companies worldwide and communicate with more than 20,000 HR departments, including, of course, the Estee Lauder companies. Mogul at Work has since expanded to offer a full suite of HR software to companies advancing diversity and inclusion in the workplace. Such software includes company webinars to train employees and overcome challenges like unconscious bias. This enables us to impact and influence the ways in which companies are communicating with women internally. As I'd seen in my time at Harvard, unconscious bias is a real hindrance for women across all industries, but there weren't any strong programs to help people overcome these biases. Companies were on their own to provide any kind of workshop, and while some human resource departments were proactive, most were reactive at best. I knew that one of the ways to increase opportunities for women was to tackle some of the internal issues they faced that had nothing to do with their qualifications and everything to do with inherent biases in hiring managers and CEOs across all different industries. These webinars would be a way for Mogul to address many of the issues that women face in their career journey: lack of promotions, lower wages, and lack of women on boards. By providing trainings on unconscious bias, inclusive leadership, and gender equity to Fortune 1000 companies and more, like the New York City Department of Education, we might close the gap that has been eluding us for years. I have no doubt that Mogul will continue developing many new innovations and cutting-edge technologies and products to help women worldwide. But Mogul has been the story of building slowly but surely, and allowing the company to tell us when it is time for more growth or a new division. As Sheryl Sandberg once said about Mogul, we did it by following our customers and following where they grow. Sometimes we have so many ideas in our head for what our company could do, it is hard to know where to prioritize. It can be hard to pace yourself when you know where you want to go and grow. But I encourage you to be patient and watchful, always ready to take a leap, but never leap without knowing that it is the right next step for you. It can be tempting to say yes to every offer that comes your way, But by creating benchmarks that allow you to stay focused on what you created your company for, you can stay focused on what partnerships and growth are really right for your company. Hashtag you are a mogul. Your dream may flame out if you don't take steps to carefully ensure its ongoing success. Trust your gut, be patient with your growth, and choose very carefully those you entrust with your mission. But when you do this, you won't be on a roller coaster. You'll be riding a rocket ship. Hashtag I am a mogul by Katrina Lake, founder and CEO of Stitch Fix, and youngest founder and CEO to take a company public. I love apparel retail. It's a large, meaningful industry in which people are thoughtfully buying things that they will love for years and years, things that represent who they are. I realized early in my career that I loved the industry, but I didn't know immediately what company to join or what role might suit me. I just wanted to be part of a team that was creating the future of retail, and I saw that future as a more personal, convenient, relevant, and fun way to help people find the things they love. My own personal experience influenced my conviction. I think many people can relate to wanting to feel great and confident in their clothes, find themselves prioritizing the most important things in their lives, and not having time to shop. Neither traditional retail stores nor spending hours searching e-commerce sites seemed like a great solution, and I knew there had to be a better way. Initially, I flirted with the idea of joining a retailer, but ultimately felt that it was going to be too hard for existing retailers to boldly change, and that disruption would most likely come from elsewhere. I joined a venture fund, hoping that I'd have the chance to meet a team that shared my vision for the future. I met over 100 entrepreneurs coming in to pitch their ideas. Many were inspiring and bold, but most of all, I realized they were just as inexperienced as I was. There didn't seem to be an exact profile of the best background for an entrepreneur. All were armed very simply with a deep belief in themselves and their company. And I realized I could do that too. I started Stitch Fix while I was at Harvard Business School to tackle a very human problem. How do I find clothes I love and that fit me and help me to feel my best? The idea of making personal styling scalable and accessible was one that got a lot of engagement and excitement from the women I knew, even before we had a website or even a business plan. It was also a concept that I could test relatively easily with online surveys, apparel from local boutiques, and many friends and friends of friends. I was able to quickly gain confidence that it was a strong value proposition for women everywhere. Building this business into a successful enterprise was going to require capital and support. I was introduced to Steve Anderson, one of the first investors in Instagram and Twitter, by a mentor of mine. Steve believed in me and my vision, and in early 2011, made a commitment to invest $500,000 in the company. I was thrilled to be officially off to the races and to get a chance to work with Steve, an incredible and experienced partner for me and for Stitch Fix. Less than a year later, Stitch Fix had a handful of employees in downtown San Francisco. Every Monday, it was all hands on deck, getting fixes out the door, and we resumed our day jobs for the rest of the week. Our client base grew through word-of-mouth referrals to people all over the country, amplified by bloggers and influencers, both large and small. It was clear from the feedback and the organic growth of our client base that the business had real promise, and it was important to build an incredible team to help bring it to life and realize its potential. While it might have seemed like a disadvantage that I didn't come from a big, well-known company with a large network of established connections, I actually found that it provided me with freedom. I looked at LinkedIn and at my school alumni network websites as a yellow pages of sorts, and found it inspiring and empowering that I had so many amazing people within reach. Two of my first leadership hires, our COO Mike Smith and our chief algorithms officer Eric Colson, are still with us today. Mike was the COO of Walmart.com before he came to Stitch Fix in 2012. He was looking for a startup company to join that had a unique and disruptive approach and where he could be really hands-on with the teams. In fact, before he even started at Stitch Fix, Mike came to help the team pack fixes on one of those manic Mondays. He was so passionate about the business. Eric was the VP of Data Science and Engineering at Netflix before he joined our team. Initially, Eric was an advisor to the company and was constantly tinkering with the incredible amount of data we had amassed in a short period of time. He was so intellectually attracted to our bold motto of shipping recommended items directly to your home that he joined full-time to build his data science team from scratch. All of our early employees shared the same passion for Stitch Fix's mission, had the vision to see its potential to scale, and possessed the grit we needed to make it work. Just as important, they believed in me and my vision, and this empowered me more and gave me the confidence to continue pursuing my dream. This Stitch Fix grit has been critical to our success as a business. Even with our seed round in hand, and one of Silicon Valley's top investors committed to the business, the process of raising more funds for Stitch Fix was difficult. After Steve's initial round, we met many more investors, but despite having a great team, a real and growing business, and clients who loved us, we still couldn't get any new investors passionate and excited enough to invest in the company. After many months of little progress on the investor front, in late 2012, we found ourselves with less than 8 weeks of cash left. In the decision to become an entrepreneur, I had contemplated and was comfortable with the risk involved. I was okay living in a small rental apartment, driving an old car with windows that didn't go all the way up, and eating instant ramen. I hadn't fully contemplated what it would feel like to be in such a precarious position and to have employees who were relying on me. Mike and Eric, for example, had given up careers at big companies to take a bet on Stitch Fix, had mortgages and kids in school. The sense of responsibility was enormous and not something I was prepared for. Steve Anderson and I got together and worked through the Excel spreadsheet that was our finances and our business plan. Together, we figured out how we could get to cash flow positive, less reliant on investors, and have more control over our destiny. It was a difficult time, but also an empowering one. With a plan and a small bridge round in place, we were on a clear path to making Stitch Fix profitable and self-sufficient. Today, Stitch Fix is a billion-dollar business with over 2.4 million clients. We have incredibly strong product-market fit, and a practical but also deeply emotional value to millions of clients that we serve every day. 7 years in, we're only just at the beginning of understanding what we can learn and how we can grow. Viewing the world through a wide lens of possibility is one of the greatest gifts. To be able to imagine something that's never been done, to achieve the seemingly impossible, to be able to believe in something that few others can even comprehend, this is the magic and essence of what makes entrepreneurship possible. Chapter 9. Make the most of every day. Being a mogul is not about building a company, securing investors, or heading an office full of employees. Being a mogul is about pushing every day to find new opportunities for growth. Whether personal or professional, always being on the lookout for ways you could achieve greater impact or partner with a new collaborator. It means setting yourself up each day to be ready for what comes. I believe that small acts can totally transform your life, and that the routine you establish for your days can lay the groundwork for success or failure. So I wanted to share how a typical day goes for me and some tools that I've learned to use to make the most of each hour of the day. Now, typical is not really typical. My days change all the time depending on if I am traveling or what kind of event I am going to. But this is how I set myself up for success, how I stay energized throughout the day, how I stay focused on what I am doing and what I need to accomplish, and how I stay inspired to keep at it and wake up excited the next morning. A day in the life. Before I go to sleep, visualize. My day actually starts the night before. Before I head to bed each night, I review my calendar for the day ahead, and hour by hour, visualize how I can overdeliver based on the goals of each conversation and meeting. What is the one thing that I need to happen in each meeting for it to be rendered a success? I visualize that happening. Visualization is something I learned to do early on in my life. I find it to be a very effective focusing tool, and it helps me identify what I truly need to make each interaction as powerful as it can be. Then I'm ready to sleep, confident that I know my goals for the next day. Wake up early. I usually don't set an alarm, and instead let my body naturally awaken, usually around 6:30 a.m. Even if I do set an alarm, I never hit snooze. As much as you may want to squeeze in 5 more minutes of sleep, resist the urge and get up immediately. You want to feel yourself spring up from bed, feeling inspired for the day ahead. Even one push of the snooze button may set you up for a day of being late or procrastinating what you need to do. And 5 more minutes of sleep are likely going to make you feel drowsier, not more rested. Exercise. In order to provide myself with as much headspace as possible to think about the day ahead and what I must accomplish, I stick to a morning routine so I don't have to expend any extra energy on what I need to do to get ready. I start the day by training each morning at a nearby dance studio called Body by Simone. I find this is the most likely time for me to be able to squeeze exercise in. If I wait until after I leave the office, I may have an evening event to attend or a dinner. So I throw on my workout outfit, grab my phone so I can listen to some energy-inducing music on the way to this studio, and get my body moving first thing in the morning. I have so much fun dancing. The exercise puts me in such a bright and happy mood for the rest of the day. Dress. I select an outfit the night before to ensure that I have the perfect look ready to match what I have to do during the most significant moment of that day, whether I'm taping a TV segment for Good Morning America as soon as the morning hits, giving a speech at the United Nations, or meeting with our team of advisors. I also suggest that you establish a unique uniform for how you dress. This not only helps with indecision about what to wear, but it also creates a look that people associate with you. For me, I wear black dresses. When it is cold in New York, I wear black tights and black trench coats over them. But I pretty much always have on a different variation of a black dress. Think about Jenna Lyons or Anna Wintour or Ernita Garcia. They have a look that everyone associates with them. Establishing your unique uniform ensures that you leave the house every morning feeling your best and like yourself. There's nothing worse than buying trendy pieces of clothing and feeling like you are putting on a costume instead of being comfortably who you are. You want to feel confident, classic, and totally you throughout the day. This starts with what you put on each morning. Connect. Every day, 15 of my closest girlfriends around the world text me good morning and vice versa. We check in with each other as a way to feel connected and supported, no matter how busy life gets. Then I check my inbox and prioritize which emails to respond to first. In any given hour, I can receive hundreds of messages, ranging from questions from mogul executives to emails from partners to special requests from users. This triggers me to focus on the places where I most need to optimize. What is most likely to move the needle for Mogul in this moment? Whatever the answer is, that is the email I prioritize next. Breakfast. I head to the first meeting of the day. I often have breakfast meetings at the same cafe near their dance studio before I go into Mogul's offices, which allows me to both refuel with a healthy meal and strengthen my relationship with whomever I am meeting. Sometimes it is with a team member from Mogul. Other times it is with a fellow entrepreneur. We share some personal stories, some professional stories. This is usually not a task-oriented meal, but a meal focused on connection and friendship. I strongly believe that everyone has something to teach, knows something better than you do. Therefore, I usually aim to uncover what that topic is over the course of the meal, and delight in learning what they know. This allows me to go into the day feeling most like myself when I've connected with someone deeply. Head to Mogul HQ. I usually arrive at the office by 9:30 a.m. I sit at the opposite end of the floor from the entrance doors. Therefore, I must walk through the entire HQ before I can make it to my desk. As I pass by, I check in with each division and each team member, seeing if and how I can support them today, and if any needs arose that morning that I haven't already addressed by email. Sometimes I may not actually make it to my desk until 1 or 2 hours later. Otherwise, I soon have back-to-back meetings with division heads, investors, advisors, partners, or reporters. I ensure that we end each meeting deciding the exact next step, whether a document needs to be sent or a follow-up meeting needs to be scheduled. It gets done that day. Lunch. At Mogul, we love catering lunch for the whole company, and it's a great way to continuously strengthen team morale. It's important to make sure you take the time to eat lunch, no matter how busy the day gets. I believe in never eating lunch alone. So if I'm not eating with the entire team, I use this time to eat with a different team member each day and continue to build our friendship. Collaborate. I make it a goal to have at least one meeting per day in which I'm meeting someone new, someone who's innovating in their own space, someone who might jolt an idea in you that will help move the business forward. I also try to schedule most of my meetings in the afternoon, after lunch, when my energy starts to lower. I invite guests to Mogo HQ and have a lounge area set up with tea and snacks so that it encourages a warmer and more personal connection. I schedule the teas for 30 to 45 minutes. Placing these meetings back-to-back in the same location keeps my mind clear before and after, freeing me from the pressure of travel times and directions. This allows me to stay energized as I meet each new person and stay focused throughout the day. I do meet outside Mogul HQ as well, but on those occasions I have admittedly been found sprinting across avenues with Nemesha in heels in order to make meetings on time, because cars in New York City are often slower. We pretend like we didn't just run a marathon once we arrive. Dinner time. After a busy day of meetings, I usually refuel around 6 p.m., while I catch up on email for the day and respond to various phone calls and texts that have remained unanswered. I often order food in, using one of the many food delivery apps that have made our lives so much easier. I love you, Seamless, Postmates, and Caviar. Social event. In the evenings, I often have events to go to, or a chance to see something that a friend is involved in. Whether it is a charity event or an art gallery opening, these events are great opportunities to reconnect with people I love, talk about what Mogo is doing, and meet potential new collaborators. Home. I'm usually back home around 9 p.m. This is when I unwind for the day, change into pajamas, and then usually hop back onto my computer for more work. I aim every night to get to inbox zero. Check in on the next day. After midnight, I wrap up work for the day and start to assess the day ahead and align goals for tomorrow. Before heading to sleep, I like to reflect on the events of the day to potentially change my perspective and see things in a different light, which then enables me to present concepts and tasks to my teams in continuously improving formats. Think about situations you could have handled differently or times you could have communicated better. As mentioned, I take this time to visualize success for the next day. Sleep. Once visualization is complete, I'm very serious about optimizing my sleep conditions. With the few hours per night you rest as an entrepreneur, you must maximize your bedroom surroundings to the best of your ability. First, disconnect from your electronic devices. The bright screen on your phone or laptop can badly affect your ability to get a solid night's rest. Ensure blinds or curtains are fully closed to create the best sleeping environment. Try listening to calm music or an audiobook. Personally, I turn my phone on Do Not Disturb. Continue to get much needed sleep and rest, no matter where you are in the world. That's a broad overview. Here's one specific day I had recently to give you a snapshot. 6 a.m. Wake up. 7 a.m. Dance studio. 9 a.m. Skype into Puerto Rico to speak with our users. 9:30 a.m. Arrive at Mogul HQ. Meet with the executive team. 10 a.m. Chief Diversity Officer for Bank of America. 11 a.m. Chief People Officer for The Honest Company. 12 to 3 p.m. Video shoot at the Broom Hotel. 12:30 p.m. Catered lunch for Mogul team at HQ. 1:30 p.m. Call with United Nations, UNICEF team. 2 p.m. Head of Talent Development at Stanley Black & Decker. 2:30 p.m. New Product Review Meeting. 3 p.m. UK Investor Meeting. 3:30 p.m. Head of Talent for Flatiron Health. 4 p.m. Catch up with singer-songwriter Carrie Kimmel. 4:30 p.m. Chief Marketing Officer for Revlon. 5 p.m. Reporter for Glamour and Teen Vogue. 5:30 p.m. Champagne toast, celebrating wins with our team. 6 p.m. Head of Employer Branding for T-Mobile. 6:30 p.m. Catch up emails with CMO of General Mills, CMO of Mercer, and CMO of IBM North America. 7 p.m. Reporters for Inc. and Forbes. 8 p.m. Birthday dinner. 12 a.m. Work on this book, but try to sleep soon. I've gotten better about this over the years. Roll with the punches. So that's a typical day for me, more or less. But because of the nature of running a startup, no day is ever the same. Sometimes I'll start a day thinking it would look one way, and it ends up looking completely different. As much as you might plan things out thoroughly, you have to allow for spontaneity. This past fall, for example, I was invited to be the keynote speaker for the International Day of the Girl Child hosted in Paris. After my talk, I flew back to New York, went straight to Mogul HQ, and had 10 deals with Fortune 1000 companies to close across all of our divisions. That night, the Mogul Studios team was headed to Boston to host Chelsea Clinton and former U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright for our hashtag Ask a Mogul series. There was so much studio equipment necessary that we didn't have enough people headed to Boston to take it to Penn Station, so I hopped into an Uber with the team to help transport it. On the way to Penn Station, we learned our Uber driver was from Boston, and when we joked that he could just drive us straight to his hometown, he replied he would be up for it. Soon enough, we were all headed to Boston together for the next 5 to 6 hours, myself included. All I had were the clothes on my back, no toothbrush, no pajamas, no change of clothes. I hadn't planned on going with a Mogul Studios team, but I changed plans on the fly. I picked up a toothbrush and some pajamas at Walgreens when we got to Boston, and I spent the next 2 days alongside Madeleine Albright and Chelsea Clinton, at least once in my new pajamas. In the end, what does remain the same for me is that every day is about high impact. It's important to perform at 100% in every moment with true kindness, authenticity, and generosity. Dealing with stress. I've often heard from friends and colleagues that I am the chillest, hardworking person they know. And I think that's because I strive to be fully present wherever I am. During the course of the day, I try not to think about what I am doing next, or what meeting I was just in, when I need to be in the now. I try to stay focused on who is in front of me at the moment. I had a speech teacher in high school mention that when she met a former U.S. president, he made her feel like she was the only person in the room. He made her feel like she was the most interesting person there. Somehow that always stuck with me. I wanted to make people feel that way as well. As mentioned, I've come to approach every conversation as an opportunity to learn. After all, everyone has something to teach, something they know better than anyone else. Seize this opportunity to uncover what it is. It helps you connect with people on a deeper level, and it also keeps you focused on the now. It keeps you from stressing about what you need to do or what you just did. You just see what it is in front of you, and then you move on to the next thing. Throughout my life, whenever I felt the tendency to get stressed out, whether it was during finals week or when I was getting ready to launch a side hustle, I would remember something that Dale Carnegie used to say. To paraphrase, the most powerful men can be so stressed out that they have to bend down to a little white pill to reduce their stress. But why does it have to be this way? Why couldn't you just remember that in this moment you do not need to be stressed, overwhelmed with anxiety? Ask yourself, is this one moment going to be important to you 5 years from now? The answer is almost always no. That mental exercise has always helped me recenter, find calm, and just focus on the task at hand. And remember, Beyoncé may have the same number of hours in the day as everyone else, but that doesn't mean all those hours are stress-free. Everyone experiences stress. What matters is how you manage it. Pushing forward always. People are surprised when they hear that I prefer not to have an assistant, but other than often having my cell phone run out of battery life, I enjoy managing my own schedule. I enjoy being accessible, available. That's why I created Mogul in the first place. Yeah, when I write it all down, it looks especially difficult. But again, I just take each meeting and each moment as it comes. I often feel so fortunate to be meeting with the companies and people I meet with that that feeling of gratitude overwhelms any feeling of exhaustion. With such high-impact days, You may look back upon the week and not remember anything you did, because you did so much. But when you work toward a mission, and you realize that just this one day could have helped to create that much more of the change that you want to see in the world, you keep going. That is being a mogul. Hashtag, you are a mogul. Figure out what you need to get the best results from your day. Be present at every moment to avoid being overwhelmed by a packed-to-the-brim calendar. We all get the same number of hours in a day, but how you structure those hours can lead to a life of lethargy, a schedule of stress, or a life of boundless energy, excitement, and enthusiasm. Hashtag I Am a Mogul by Star Jones, attorney, advocate, and original co-host of ABC's The View. I want you to know that your success is unlimited. This world will tell you that because you are a woman, you are limited. Don't believe it. As a student, you will be told to study one area of interest, declare one major. When you land your first real job, you will be told to climb the ladder and stay there until you retire. And when the time comes, you will be told to choose between having a super successful career and being an active nurturer for your family. When you have dreams that are too large for most people to understand, you will be told they are nice, but to make sure you have a backup plan for your impending failure. At every corner, you will face a naysayer, an obstacle, or an internal feeling that you're simply not good enough. I'm here to tell you that it's all lies. You're more than enough. If your work ethic matches your dreams, there are no limits. You absolutely can work your way up in a company or organization from entry level to executive. Or you can start your own company, write a book, launch a nonprofit, whatever your heart desires. There are no limitations on your dreams as long as they're backed up by action. If you have 5 talents, you can use all 5 of them. If you have 10 dreams, the one that seems the craziest, scariest, and most daring is the one that will succeed. You do not have to choose between career and family, but you will have to choose to align yourself with people and career opportunities that respect the fact that you have a career and a family. To get through the days that seem hard and discouraging, remember 3 things. You will get better with time. Do not add a projected date to every milestone you hope to reach. No, you will not accomplish all of your life's goals by age 25, maybe not even age 35. You are fine wine, and age and wisdom will look good on you. Your talent, character, skills, and passions are a journey, not a destination, and will develop over time. Stay connected. The people you connect with will bring you knowledge and countless opportunities. Choose your alignments carefully and never underestimate the value and necessity of a solid personal and professional network. Support other women. The world will make you think you and other women are competing for the same prize. Social media will have you comparing shades of grass, relationships, success, and dress sizes. Under no circumstances must you accept or participate in this dog-eat-dog culture. There's enough success to go around. Supporting other women should be your life's mandate, and you will be happier and widely respected due to your willingness to lift up other women. A rising tide lifts all boats, and as women, we're all in this together. Chapter 10, Rely on Your Why. At the end of the day, I didn't create Mogul to make money. I created Mogul to offer opportunities to women, opportunities for connecting, sharing, learning, and growing. I did it to amplify women's voices around the world, so they could express their unfiltered opinions without fear, find community and inspiration, and learn new skills. I did it to honor my family, my parents, for all the sacrifices they made for my siblings and me. I work hard every day to make them proud, to thank them for encouraging me to strive for my full potential, and for showing me that a commitment to others and making the world a better place are truly possible. To me, an empire is not created to amass dollars in the bank, but to create lasting and global impact. This is my why. More and more, we are all demanding jobs that are mission-oriented, that are fulfilling on a personal level and financially rewarding. Adam Newman, founder of WeWork, says, "We're observing a large generation of amazing individuals being interested in intention and meaning more than material goods. This is largely changing the corporate landscape and the way people work. When your work is personal and fulfilling and driven by more than money, you no longer need a work-life balance. Work and life begin to fuse together until every moment of your life is just that, life. The why behind Mogul is what keeps me going. No matter how long the days get, when I remember my why, I'm always re-energized, refocused, and ready to see what other problems Mogul might be able to solve. Does not matter where you are on your journey. Right now, figure out why you are going after what you want. Keep that why in front of you every step of the way. It will never lead you astray. Specify your why. Even if you've never considered your why, I invite you to move beyond individual motives. How could you, and only you, help us create the changes we need in this world? To be mission-oriented is to be focused on accomplishing something outside of rising in the ranks or pulling in more cash for yourself. It means impacting change in some way, creating hope or opportunity in areas that desperately need it. It can be a global need, like addressing rights for immigrants, or a personal issue, like helping to put your niece through college. But either way, when your why involves giving back to others, it pushes you forward and allows you to work harder and longer because you know your end goal is bigger than yourself. Sometimes our why can start out in broad strokes, wanting to help the environment or hoping to address lack of opportunity in low-income neighborhoods. But over time, you can home in on how exactly you can help or the incremental ways you might address a need. After all, Mogul was born from an overall dream to help the countless women across the globe reaching out to me for advice about their personal and professional lives. As I aimed to respond to each new message that came in, I felt strongly that it was important that they have access to the same resources that I had, no matter where they lived. Even more, I wanted them to be able to connect with each other, to realize that when we joined together, we could have a greater impact than we ever could have on our own. But over time, my why came into focus. What was once a broad goal began to evolve into something more specific the longer I worked toward it. I knew that Mogul was uniquely poised to help women, but with so many problems facing women in the world, how specifically could it be most impactful? Early in Mogul's existence, we began to identify the importance of focusing on girls' education. Many cultures still do not value girls' education, refusing access to girls from a very young age. Michelle Obama and the Let Girls Learn initiative publicized the shocking statistic that more than 62 million girls were being denied access to education every year. The reasons were varied. Poverty, forced marriage, child labor. In some countries, due to lack of social services and orphanages, children were forced to go to prison with their mothers when they were incarcerated, many times not for criminal charges, but because they broke cultural taboos. Despite the fact that these children were supposed to be removed from the prisons at age 5 so that they could receive access to education, many countries did not have the resources to provide care for these children, so they languished in prison, with no exposure to education or the outside world. It wasn't until an unexpected trip to Austria in 2016 that I became convinced that lack of education for girls was something that Mogul could address and needed to focus on even more. I'd been invited to speak at the Imperial Palace Hofburg in Vienna. When I arrived, of the 20 people who had been invited to speak and were present, I was the only woman. Yet I was in awe of my fellow speakers. That invited royalty from Saudi Arabia, Jimmy Wales, founder of Wikipedia, Tim Draper, the legendary investor, Ralph Simon, founder of Jive Records, Uma Valetti, founder of Memphis Meats, and Adam Chire, creator of Siri, all pioneers who are doing incredible, innovative things, driven by the desire to solve a global issue. The day before our speeches were to take place, we were flown to an off-site location, where we were locked into a room together with glass windows all around us, as if to literally and figuratively expand our views of the world, and asked the following question. If there was one problem in the world that, when solved, would then solve all other problems in the world, what would that problem be, and how would you solve it? I was sitting in a room with some of the most brilliant minds in the world. The debate was lively, heated, and filled with amazing arguments. Some people thought we needed to address the lack of clean water. Others suggested that we seek to concentrate on famine. Most people's problems were tied to what they were doing in the world, what their enterprise was currently addressing. I sat there listening. It felt so familiar, being in a room of men who were older than me, who were all very comfortable adding their voice to the conversation. I knew that I offered a different perspective, as my solution hadn't been brought up yet. I knew what I needed to say. Finally, there was a slight pause in the debate. I worked up the courage in that moment, knowing it was now or never. Despite my hesitation, I knew I would regret it later if I didn't go for it. Quietly, I said, if the lack of girls' education was solved, it would solve all other problems. All 19 men turned in my direction. I said it again. This time, a little louder. If girls across the globe had access to the education they desperately needed, it would solve every other problem. Even though I could tell that several of the men wanted to question the idea and go back to their own proposed problems, the energy in the room shifted. As we began to debate how many doors this would open, how many more minds we would add to the global conversation, how many more families would be lifted out of poverty, the discussion got more and more lively. This was it. Women needed access to education, and the rest of the world's problems would ultimately be solved. Why? Because when women are equipped to understand the value that they bring to the world, when they are empowered to realize that they can solve any problem, address any issue, and offer a valuable opinion, then their family, their community, and their whole world will change. As the room reached a consensus that girls' education would solve other issues, the 20 of us then contributed different ideas as to what could help solve the lack of girls' education. When combined, everyone's ideas sounded markedly like the structure behind Mogul. The final remark before our session ended was, well, I guess we should all be investing in Mogul. And many did. I knew without a doubt that Mogul could be doing even more to provide access to education. That moment crystallized my why in a way that I hadn't felt before. I came back to our HQ more determined than ever. Mogul was offering priceless resources with its Mogul learning courses, but we knew there were likely many girls who didn't know about Mogul who could benefit from those courses. How could we reach them? How could we stay committed to addressing this problem? In 2017, we found the answer. Partner to broaden your reach and impact. Just a few months after the launch of Mogul, I'd been asked to be the closing speaker at an event at Bloomberg through one of our advisors. Despite the many pitches I had made to investors, it was only my second time speaking in public about Mogul. The first was the premiere in Los Angeles. And I was thrilled yet anxious about the opportunity, and even more so when a line of people formed to talk to me afterward. One of those people was a woman organizing a forum at the United Nations on diversity and global leadership. She talked to me about the event's purpose, and then casually asked whether I might be interested in speaking at it. I looked at this woman, and a chill went down my spine. I remembered how years earlier, my father had predicted that this day would come, when I was contemplating quitting my job in finance and taking an unpaid internship at the UN, he had told me to wait, that my time would come, that I would one day be invited to the UN as a guest. This woman had no idea how much her request meant to me. I, of course, accepted, trying to keep my cool, and finished greeting the other people in the line. I then went back to my apartment, where I couldn't wait to tell my parents what had happened. And on Mogul's one-year anniversary, there I stood at the front microphone, speaking to the rest of the UN chamber, where my name lit up in blue on the screen in front of me. It was a surreal moment. I could have been so nervous.